Thank you, Jim. I'm Brian Sullivan. Tonight, the big bank meltdown, sending your money down. Why what's happening out west could impact the entire country. Healthcare fraud, our investigation into the brazen theft of COVID money, and holy tax hike, the Biden proposal that could send your taxes up and the markets down. That and much more with that all-star panel. So belly up or buckle up. Last call is up right now. Well, good evening here and good afternoon out west. All right, we're going to hit all that and more, including tech, taxes, and Texas in the next 60 minutes. But first up on Last Call, the big banking blowup that's happening out west. If you have not been paying attention, you should be. In just 48 hours, two major California banks have been absolutely crushed. Silvergate Capital, which is focused on cryptos like Bitcoin, is going belly up and shutting down. And today, Silicon Valley Bank lost about 70% of its value, including the move that's happening right now. And now billionaire techie Peter Thiel is reportedly telling investors to get their money out of the bank. So maybe now you're watching or listening at home and thinking, why should I care about either of them? Or is this a story at all? After all, these banks messed around and found out. Well, why you care is what could be next. This is, after all, the latest in a series of dominoes. Let's put it together. First up, the cryptocurrency bubble popped. A lot of cryptos, little ones, went away. And some smaller to mid-sized crypto firms went bust. Next up, of course, FTX, run by the now disgraced alleged fraudster Sam Bankman-Fried. Yesterday, Silvergate Capital, once one of the hottest stocks, not just banks, hottest stocks in America, says it is liquidating and shutting down. And now today, another big California bank, this one focused on investors, venture capital, and big tech, wipes out its investors by about 70% because its deposits crashed and it had to sell billions in assets at a loss. In all, it's really been a series of loosely connected dominoes, crypto to crypto firms to crypto bank, and now a bank focused on big tech with many investors. No doubt some of them invested in crypto. So now the question is this it? Is the worst over? Or, like back just before subprime, is there something else that we may need to worry about hidden under the rug of interest rate hikes and a potentially slow-rolling implosion of some big tech investors? Joining us now with reaction is somebody who's become synonymous with Silicon Valley innovation and investing all around that theme, and that is ARK Invest CEO Cathie Wood. Cathie, couldn't think of a more perfect person to have on because this is scary what's happening. I mean, do you worry that there is a greater contagion risk from Silvergate and Silicon Valley Bank? Or do you think, again, it is kind of contained within those two?
Well, first, Brian, I'd like to congratulate you on your new show. I'm very happy for you and your team. Does this concern me? Is there contagion? Certainly there was contagion last year. We often describe what happened last year, which was a crisis in crypto, as really proving the concept. What happened? It was centralized, opaque institutions that failed. And some of that was because of fraud. If you looked at the blockchain technology, so Bitcoin blockchain and Ethereum, they really didn't skip a beat. Sure, their prices went down, but if you looked at the way they were processing transactions, the smart contracts, the automated margin calls, they worked perfectly. So we think that it proved the concept that decentralized, transparent ecosystems are going to do much better, we think, than centralized institutions that are opaque and actually, in the case of these banks, maybe took on more risk that people didn't know about.
Yeah, and I don't want to necessarily blame crypto for Silicon Valley Bank because I don't know what happened. We're going to learn what's going on, and maybe things will ultimately be fine. General Atlantic took a big stake yesterday. We'll see. Here's what makes me nervous and why I wanted you to come on and talk about the bigger picture. Silicon Valley Bank, they don't make mortgages. They are a bank for venture capitalists, private equity, some of the smartest and richest people in America, many of which are, of course, in the Silicon Valley area, now taking their money out. When I see those types of people getting clearly panicked, why should we sort of remain calm?
Well, I do think that the Silicon Valley Bank is a bit, it's got some similarities to other banks, but differences as well. We look at the mismatch between their assets and liabilities. So when money came gushing in during the COVID crisis with all of the stimulus money, Silicon Valley Bank put a lot of that to work in what were at the time high yielding assets, but that averaged only 1.6 or 1.7%. Today, in order to attract and maintain deposits, you have to pay up, and banks are not paying up, and they are all seeing their bank deposits go down. If you look, I'm saying that's an average. Mm-hmm. Deposits year over year are down across the system by 4%. Why? Because money market funds are paying much higher interest. And so funds are flowing. Now, the large banks do not have a problem. I mean, with all of the capital standards that they have been subjected to since 08, 09, they've actually been too flush with deposits. They don't want to make that many loans.
Well, they all did. By the way, Kathy, I know today was kind of a wild day. They all got crushed. Charles Schwab, which is not a bank, to be clear. Charles Schwab lost 13% of its value today. Charles Schwab went down. I'm not picking on them. Big name. When I was covering subprime back in 2006, 2007, I heard the phrase, it's contained, it's contained, it's over here, it's not a big deal, more times than I can count. We know that was wrong. This is not that. But the St. Louis Federal Reserve about a month ago had a report saying higher rates, this huge move in rates and change in bonds may catch banks off guard. We clearly learned that today with Silicon Valley Bank. I can't believe, just maybe I'm just a grizzled old, you know, angry journalist, but I can't believe they're the only ones that this massive move in rates is going to impact.
Yeah, I mean, bank analysts are taking, if they haven't already, a close look at the duration mismatch of various banks. And so you saw some banks went down much more than others. Yes, the big banks were hit. And as we've talked to people who I think understand the big banks very well, we don't think there's a problem there. But there are mismatches in the smaller banks, and they got hit today. So yes, it's an issue.
Does it make you change how you invest, Kathy?
No, it doesn't. We've got a 5-year investment time horizon. We're focused on companies that are going to transform the way the world works. And sure, they rely on funding and orderly capital markets. Many of them did secondaries during 2020, especially, which was a great year for innovation. Mm-hmm. So most of our companies do not have immediate needs for financing. I would say 99% of them. I'm sure one or two might do a financing, but so we don't think there's an issue there. No, we're not worried for our strategy. In fact, what we've been looking at for the last, well, 6 months, almost 6 months, is the inverted yield curve, which has gone more inverted, so that long-term bonds are yielding less than short-term instruments. That's part of the problem for these banks that we just talked about, but it is also a macro indicator, we think, that is telling us, the bond market is speaking very loudly, that is telling us that the risks are not on the side of inflation. If anything, when I hear and see banking crises, and this is bank by bank, I don't think it's a banking system crisis, mm-hmm. but when I see bank crises like this, I think more about deflation than inflation, right? That certainly was the way to think about 08, 09.
Well, we'll see, Kathy, and we got to go, and we love your take. if money printing and bailouts also come with this. It's small now. These are big banks, but it's not national. But this is, I think this is a bigger story. Very quickly, do you think Silicon Valley Bank survives? Do you think they're 40 years old? Do you think they make it?
You know, I did not see before I came on your show what Peter Thiel had said. He's very powerful in the world of Silicon Valley. So that would lower the odds, I would say. And that's all I'll say. You know, it's just, banks are not our area of expertise. We think the world's going to move over to digital wallets ultimately, with much more decentralized, transparent ecosystems and away from traditional banking system.
Kathy Wood, got to leave it there. Thank you very much, Kathy. Really appreciate it. By the way, reached out to Peter Thiel. Peter, if you're there, call into the show, put you on live. All right. In other blockbuster bank news, new details are emerging surrounding a former J.P. Morgan executive's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. Eamon Javers has more. Eamon.
Yeah, Brian, today a federal judge ordered the company and CEO Jamie Dimon to turn over the documents related to this case. And lawyers for the U.S. Virgin Islands say they want those documents because Jamie Dimon is the key player who they say in a court filing likely knows why, even after they kicked him out of the bank back in 2013, J.P. Morgan continued to have a business development relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. They say Dimon was involved with and had decision-making authority over Epstein accounts and was, quote, in discussions involving Epstein's referrals of prominent high-wealth potential clients to J.P. Morgan. All of that comes a day after J.P. Morgan sued its own former high-level executive, Jess Staley, for damages related to the allegations in court filings. In its own filing, J.P. Morgan doesn't acknowledge that it did anything wrong and owes anyone money. But if a court does find that they do have liability here, J.P. Morgan says it's Staley personally who should be on the hook for that liability. In the suit, J.P. Morgan says Staley persisted for years, from at least 2006 until his departure from JPMC in 2013, in protecting Epstein in the face of attempts by JPMC to end the company's relationship with Epstein. But the most damning and so far unproven allegation relayed in the suit is that Staley allegedly used aggressive force in his sexual assault of an anonymous woman who is now suing the bank. Staley has not responded to emailed requests for comment on all this. Staley was once considered heir apparent to CEO Jamie Dimon, but decided to leave J.P. Morgan back in 2013. He has said that while he was friendly with Epstein, he never knew about Epstein's crimes. J.P. Morgan declined to comment on today's developments when I emailed them earlier. Mm. Brian, back over to you.
Oh, Eamon Javers, thank you. One does wonder if Epstein's web around Wall Street will ensnare more. Eamon, thank you. All right, stick around. We've got some breaking developments on what we just talked about, the implosion or near implosion of one of California's biggest banks. Deirdre Bosa up with that next. All right, welcome back to Last Call. If you do not like red on your screen, we advise you to look away. I mean, right now, because it was an ugly day on the street of dreams. Stocks hammered. That is not hyperbole. Only 26 of the S&P 500 made investors any money today. My math says that's about 95% of stocks were down. And here's an RBI, random but interesting. Five stocks fell more than 10%, including, which we just talked about, Charles Schwab, which crumbled nearly 13%. Kind of an ugly day today. But hey, tomorrow's a new day. We'll see what happens, show you the futures in a bit. All right, right now, more developments on the developing and important story around Silicon Valley Bank, the company facing what can only be described as a bank run. This one day after another high-tech bank, Silvergate Capital, said it was liquidating. There's some fast-moving headlines around the story. Let's get now more with CNBC's Deirdre Bosa, who's in San Francisco, been speaking with investors. Deirdre.
Brian, it is all that anyone here can talk about. I've had so many discussions. I spoke to one investor, it's very well connected, that said that he's received calls from no less than 15 founders who have been asking him if they should take their money out of Silicon Valley Bank. And he's saying, yes, if you can. Now, what's going on here? Let me put this in context, because Silicon Valley Bank, it is really difficult to overstate how important it is to the Bay Area, to the tech ecosystem. Approximately half of all venture capital investment dollars in the economy they eventually flow back through Silicon Valley Bank in deposits. So this is crucial. And now you have a moment where, you said it, Brian, a lot of people here don't want to use those words bank run, but it certainly looks like it, with more and more founders coming out and saying that maybe they should be pulling out their money. And what I'm hearing is that even if the capital structure, even if the capital requirements look good, and they do at Silicon Valley Bank, no one wants to be the last one to panic. No one wants to be the last one out. So that is the situation we're in, Brian. This is still unfolding. And the CEO earlier today tried to stem these losses. He actually had to get onto a phone call with some of the clients and tell them, stay calm. It's not a great thing when you're hearing that from a bank CEO.
Yeah, I heard that, and I thought about Kevin Bacon in Animal House when he said, stay calm, and everybody kind of runs over and he's left on the ground. It's kind of a classic bank run, to your point, Deirdre, right? I mean, people say, well, I better get in line ahead of this next guy. Is there anybody that you're talking to who is saying it's going to be all right, coming out in defense of this company, which may not be a household name for a lot of our Last Call viewers, but is a critically important bank in California, critical, particularly in the Bay Area, for investors?
It is the backbone of the tech industry here. I cannot tell you how important that is to many of the startup and the VC ecosystem and investors here. So there are some supporters coming out and saying, listen, Silicon Valley Bank supported you, your small startup, you as an entrepreneur, when you needed it. Now is the time to support them. It's not helping a whole lot because it comes down to dollars and cents. And like we talked about, you don't want to be the last one to get your money out. There are a lot of questions about what the CEO, Greg Becker, should do now. We talked to him a few weeks ago on Tech Check, and he said actually that the rate of cash burn from startups, he expected it to ease in the second half of the year, but he expected it to get worse in the first half. And that's exactly what he's seeing. And that's what led to this mess, is that they were suffering a higher cash burn than expected. Yeah. They had to sell some of their assets at a loss. And now here's what you're seeing with the deposits.
Yeah, it's one of these stories that Silicon Valley Bank is not a household name for most of our viewers. It's West Coast based, but to your point, critically important,
it's important
in one of the biggest industries in the world. Deirdre Bosa, I'm sure we'll see you tomorrow. Deirdre, thank you. All right, speaking of tomorrow, it is time for tomorrow's news tonight. The stories that you will be talking about tomorrow morning, obviously Silicon Valley Bank is one, but there are others. Investors in Oracle taking some heat after hours. Sales came in under expectations, and that stock sank. By the way, Oracle Executive Chairman Larry Ellison, one of the world's richest men, speaking on the call about how his company uses artificial intelligence for healthcare, and in doing so, took a jab at some of AI's other uses.
People talk about ChatGPT being really cool because it can write my high school essay for me. Well, how about reducing hospital readmissions at MD Anderson by 30%? You decide which is more important.
And if you know Larry, and I have a bit, that is so Larry. All right, next up. In a surprise to absolutely nobody, Chinese President Xi Jinping expected to be approved for a third term tomorrow. Shocking, we know. The move comes as U.S.-China tensions have been at the highest level in decades. Now, once approved, Xi will remain in power for at least another 5 years. That will make him the longest-serving Chinese leader since 1949. I would take the over on that. And finally, putting on the brakes, the Wall Street Journal is reporting the American Association of Railroads is calling on certain types of train cars to be taken out of service. The group says the cars in question have experienced three loose wheels on one of its railroads. It's coming after yet another Norfolk Southern train derailed earlier today in Alabama. Thankfully, nobody was injured. As far as we know, nothing toxic was released. All right, still ahead. Billionaire Peter Thiel saying, get out of a troubled California bank. Shares are down. Is this a one-off story or contagion risk for tech and banking? All right, welcome back to Last Call. President Biden unveiling his nearly $7 trillion budget today. It is filled with a lot of spending and a lot of new taxes. Kayla Tausche joining us with more on what we know and maybe what we don't. Kayla.
Brian, the White House budget is taking a harder line on taxing wealthy individuals and companies in order to lower the deficit over time and pay for ambitious new social programs that may sound familiar. In all, the administration proposes spending $4.2 trillion on Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare, with tax changes to make it more sustainable, $885 billion for defense, with China, the administration saying is the main threat. $1 trillion for non-defense programs, with Homeland Security the only agency seeing a budget decrease, and some $790 billion that they expect to pay just in interest next year. The plan also calls for more than $4.5 trillion in tax increases. The White House is raising overall rates on Americans earning more than $400,000, adding a 25% tax on unrealized assets over $100 million, hiking the corporate rate, quadrupling a buyback tax, and removing lower rates for capital gains and carried interest. Those are the proposals. But the budget, which Mr. Biden says reflects his values, lays out policy priorities for a potential second term: paid leave, home care for elders and kids, restoring and expanding the child tax credit, among others. And in a speech today from Philadelphia, which coincidentally was his 2020 campaign headquarters, the president said the ball is in Republicans' court.
So I want to make it clear, I'm ready to meet with the speaker anytime, tomorrow, if he has his budget. Lay it down, tell me what you want to do, I'll show you what I want to do, see what we can agree on, or we don't agree on.
The Republicans have yet to agree on their plan, but were united in their opposition to the White House's proposal. House leadership called it reckless, saying this is a spending problem, not a revenue problem. The White House acknowledges this budget has no future in its current form in Congress, but says it's the starting point. Brian?
Akilah Tausche, thank you very much. All right, let's get some reaction to this from our esteemed panel tonight. Founder and CEO of Operation Hope, John Hope Bryant. New York Post business reporter Lydia Moynihan. And former OMB director and former White House chief of staff Mick Mulvaney. Mick, I'm going to start with you, probably on both topics tonight because of where you worked before. If the budget has no realistic chance of passing, and it does not, and Kayla said the White House team knows that, why do they come out with all these proposals which won't go anywhere? It's just pure electioneering?
To a certain extent, Brian, a budget document is a messaging document, right? It tells you a lot about the priorities of an administration. So what they're really saying is, look, left to our own devices, this is what we would do if we didn't have to deal with Congress, we didn't have to deal with House Republicans or even Senate Democrats, because keep in mind, I mean, the Democrats ran the town for 2 years and didn't get a lot of this stuff done. So if they didn't have to deal with any of that, this is what the world would look like. It will be ignored by Congress. It is every single year. It doesn't mean it doesn't have any value. I happen to think, by the way, the most interesting thing is buried deep in the back are the projections of what the administration think the world looks like for the next 10 years. So there's value in this document, there's no question. It's not just an electioneering document. It does sort of tell you what the priorities of the administration are, and for that it has value.
John Hope Bryant, your greatest takeaways from what we heard today from the president? A lot of spending, a lot of good being done, but also a lot of tax increases.
I think that if you reflect back on, by the way, congratulations on your new show. It's fantastic. I think if you think back to what I've said in the last few weeks, actually the last year, we're at war. We're at war with the virus. There's countries that believe they're at war with us. We're not at war with them, but they want to be us. Did I say China? In Russia. They want to be us. And our infrastructure is lacking. We just passed an infrastructure bill. We have a CHIPS bill bringing manufacturing back home. I think that if this is viewed, and I agree with Mick, if this is a messaging document, if the view is this is a spending document, if it's viewed as an investment document, then because if you think about what happens in war and post, you need to double down. And you need to reinvest
John,
in your best product,
John,
America.
John,
go ahead.
And I don't mean to interrupt, John, but I got to tell you that John and I have had this conversation many times before, Brian. For this administration, what's the difference between spending and investment? Isn't everything an investment? I mean, what in this $7 trillion? Keep in mind, it's a $7 trillion document, okay? The budget I wrote just 5 years ago was 4.5. This is as big as the budget at the height of the war on COVID. All right, COVID's over. That war is finished. We're not really at war with Russia. We're not really at war with China. But we're still spending money like we did when we really were at war with COVID.
Well,
when is spending?
Lydia, a lot of language trickery here. And I'm going to give the president's PR team credit because they're good at this, right? They say we're going to cut the deficit. And people go, oh, the deficit's going down. Any deficit is bad. Deficit means you're spending more than you're putting in. This is going to be the third or fourth highest deficit non-COVID years ever. In the history of America, more than a trillion spent. It's like if you made $200,000 a year, you spent $400,000. The next year, you spend $300,000. You're like, hey, we just saved $100,000. I'm going to go on a really nice vacation.
politicians are masters at wordsmithing. That really is what they do for a living. Yeah, when you talk about debt reduction, you're not actually talking about shrinking the debt. You're talking about decreasing the rate at which it accelerates. So it's all kind of a word game here. And I believe it increases the debt about 1.8 trillion
to 33 plus trillion dollars
saving
with
money. You know, I think a lot, it's interesting, even Republicans recognize, okay, you know what, we need to start getting the balanced budget. But what's interesting here is he wants to keep hiking spending and he just wants to keep hiking taxes alongside it. And one of the issues is that all of these economists have rosy predictions for what growth is going to be like. Well, if you disincentivize work, if you basically in some states make the income tax rate about 60%, who's gonna want to work in this case? And so I think it's really wild that this is really what President Biden is signaling he wants to do with his second term. You know, he could announce his candidacy as soon as next month. And so I think the timing of this is very significant. And I also want to note, this is not the first time they've raised taxes. They just passed the Inflation Reduction Act, which hiked taxes on a lot of corporations and other entities. So this is not the first of its kind for the Biden administration.
Look, let me say something. Look, Mick, I wasn't going to pick on you, brother, but, you know, it wasn't like the Trump years were great years for budget reduction. You guys spent money like water and rain. I love you now, but let's be clear. Part of this is messaging of note that the wealthy, for which I guess I now qualify.
Congratulations, by the way. That's the case.
will not get less taxes. You're going to pay your fair share. I think that is the messaging, which is the different from the last administration's messaging. This stuff will not turn out the way it looks right now, but I think that is what some of the messaging is. We should also know Americans need to be trained on how to understand what all this stuff means. We're financially illiterate as a country, and 70% of this economy is consumer spending. So the economy will continue to grow as long as the middle class and the working class are strong. That's what I meant about, Mick, investment. You knew what I meant. That as long as we have the middle of this country strong and growing, you have a growing economy. Or put another way, my rich friends, my poor friends do better if only to stay rich.
I want to jump in here because we still haven't gotten a definition of what fair share is. I mean,
that's
it seems
it.
Like such
what
a
is sliding
it?
What is fair
scale.
Share? 50% of your
fair
income?
Fair share, right. Last 4 years ago, it was one thing. Now it's another. And we still haven't defined fair share. It looks like, though, corporate taxes are going to be higher than the average of other G7 taxes.
I'm going to say something that's going to make our entire audience turn off the TV right now. So I apologize to all my producers and bosses. Here's the dirty secret. Okay, if you make $100,000 a year, which in a lot of parts of America is a lot of money, have two kids and a mortgage, your net effective income tax rate is probably zero. It's probably zero. You're paying Medicare and Social Security. Middle class tax rates have never been lower. I'm not saying they should go up, Mick. What I'm saying is, to John's point, is that, and by the way, he's right. I would say that both parties spend like drunken sailors, but we might have some drunken sailors watching the show, and I don't want to insult them. Okay? At some point, if we keep spending, this is not going to just fall on 2.8 million people who make over $400,000 a year when middle class tax rates have never been lower.
Let's go one step further. The wealthy have never been.
Go ahead, Mick, and then John, respond, please.
Well, you said we used to line in the White House whenever we would critique the Democrats, which is, you know, why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is. Sooner or later, you have to go to the middle class if you really want to raise money. There's just not enough rich people to pay for this. Look, the budget that Biden put out today has deficits forever. And I'm waiting for a Democrat to come up and say, and I'll give John a chance to say, John, can you really defend deficits over $1 trillion forever? Or is at some point, is that unfair to the next generation? At some point, is it immoral to the next generation to simply, look, raise taxes if you want to, that's great. But if you're going to raise taxes, let's use it to balance the budget. Let's not use it to spend more money so that deficits continue to go up. That's the conversation I want to have. Why do they want to raise taxes? And it looks like they want to raise taxes, not because they want to lessen the deficit, because they just want to spend more money. And I think that's a problem.
Is this whole country on ADD? I mean, are we just all just have attention deficit disorder? Didn't we just come through the worst pandemic in 125 years? Weren't we all concerned in March of 2020 that the entire economy was going to literally implode into rock, paper, scissors? What weren't we like not sure that, that the biggest economy? Hold on, Mick, I let you finish. I love you. I let you finish. So we had to save the economy from a war, from a virus, and that took a few trillion dollars to do. had never been written $1 trillion from any country, for any government ever. And we did it beautifully. Now the Fed, probably too much medicine, is trying to correct that by raising interest rates. So it's a manufactured response to a manufactured crisis. And now we're trying to pay some of that back, to suggest that everything has to be paid back in one term after another president, who happens to be from a different party. I'm nonpartisan here, who's, I think, mismanaged his administration, to suggest that we got to fix that in one administration and in response to that is a little ridiculous. We have got to find a glide path out of this that I think is sustainable, and we have to fix our infrastructure, including human infrastructure.
That's fair points, although I would argue with you about all the stimulus needed for COVID. The second round, a lot of countries didn't do as much. Did just as well in terms of outcomes. Lydia, let's go back to the budget, what Kayla said. Let's say we agree to spend money in all the good programs, John. Lydia, here's the problem. $790 billion in interest payments. Apollo, the big fund, came out, I did it I think 2 weeks ago, on the air, and said that interest payments are going to be over $1 billion a day to the upside. So all this money we're going to raise from taxes is probably just going to go to paying, some retirees, that's great, but a lot of other foreign countries buying our debt in interest, just money out the door, because all that inflation has caused the Fed to spike interest rates, and we're just going to pay $1 trillion a year or $1 billion a day, whatever it may be, in interest cost, not benefiting the American consumer. Squat, I think, is the technical
term. You hit the nail on the head. That's why all of this spending is a real problem. And it's not just paying foreign countries. In this case, it's paying foreign adversaries, right? We're sort of in a cold war with China, right? We're dealing with TikTok and Chinese spy balloons and trying to ban it. And yet we're sending billions and trillions of dollars out the door to them. I also just want to respond to what John is saying. We need money for all of these things. And I'm all for good roads. I'm all for infrastructure. We just spent trillions, right? I'm getting all the numbers wrong because they're just so big at this point. We've spent trillions on all of that. So I think the argument that we need to be spending more money is just falling on deaf ears. No, it's like, at what point is it enough?
Yeah. Well, great. By the way, great discussion, smart discussion, civil discussion. We had kisses blown. Kisses were blown by John to Mick. If you're listening on the radio, John blew Mick a kiss. Mick, back. I don't know if that was to me, Mick, but I return. Lydia, thank you. Good cut. Have a great night. Still ahead, an exclusive CNBC investigation into the shadowy world of Medicare and Medicaid fraud, criminals stealing staggering amounts of your money. Contessa Brewer, next. All right, welcome back to Last Call. Fresh developments now on what is becoming a bigger story by the hour. Another big California-based bank facing, really, can't be called anything but an investor panic. Shares of Silicon Valley Bank. May not have heard of them. It's one of the oldest and biggest banks in California. It's not a traditional bank. It is focused primarily on tech and VC investors. The stock closed down today 60%. It is down another 28% after hours, meaning 24-hour decline more than 70%. Now, yesterday, crypto-focused bank Silvergate Capital said it was shutting down, liquidating. So what exactly is going on with some of these big banks, particularly in California, and could it be the sign of a bigger issue? CNBC reporter Hugh Sun joining us now. Hugh, again, maybe not a household name bank, but as we talked about with Deirdre Bosa, pretty darn important.
It's a household name in the startup world for sure. They've been around for four decades and have really played an instrumental role in the development of a startup culture in this country. And that's why it's shocking that, there seems to be, the makings of a classic bank run in terms of concern and fear about the return of your money, Brian.
Yeah. And where does this go from here? There was an SEC filing. I don't want to go into the weeds too much, that a big other fund, General Atlantic Partners, well-known venture capital, looks like they took a $500 million stake yesterday, but clearly did not help today. I mean, how does this play out, Hugh? And in your reporting, because our viewers may not care about this one bank, is there any contagion risk here?
Well, it helps to back up a little bit, Ryan. So they raised about $2.3 billion in debt and equity today to shore up the hole that had developed in their balance sheet from people taking out money, founders obviously not raising money in the public market, so drawing down the reserves, and that put pressure on them. Plus, an ill-timed bet on some bonds at low payouts. Now My understanding is that, from the people I've talked to, there's going to be additional pressure because of the action today. And we don't know the extent of that, a small sample size, but I've talked to people who've taken out half of their deposits. Yeah, I'm talking about tens of millions of dollars in VC money that they've raised that they parked at Silicon Valley Bank. They've removed that because of the concern that they won't be able to get it out later. So this is really a concern. Nobody knows where it ends. We shouldn't feed into the concern and fear, however, and just report on it. It's safe to say that there is the makings of a potential run on this bank.
Well, there clearly is. I mean, I don't think we're doing anything wrong. Houston, we got to go. Thank you. Throw the stock chart back up, guys. Down 60% today. It's down 26% right now. It actually sold off more after hours lately. Peter Thiel reportedly telling people to get out. It's a big, big story. We're continuing to monitor it. Head over to CNBC.com for Hugh's latest reporting as well. I doubt Hugh's going to get a lot of sleep tonight. All right, while Washington argues how much money to spend on Medicare and Medicaid, fraudsters are stealing staggering amounts of money and costing you billions in lost taxpayer dollars. A CNBC investigation found the system is riddled with abuse and it is easily exploited. Here is CNBC's Contessa Brewer.
This is the face of healthcare fraud in America. A Miami businessman smiling as he counts stolen Medicare money in this video secretly recorded by a government informant. The business of stealing Medicare and Medicaid dollars has never been as brazen. Omar Perez Ibar is Florida's special agent in charge for the Office of Inspector General.
We're going to head over to a durable medical equipment company.
Durable medical equipment, DME. Think braces and wheelchairs. Fraudsters buy lists of patients and doctors so they can steal from the government.
And with those two key pieces of information, they can sit at a place that is open Wi-Fi and just start submitting claims to Medicare.
In South Florida alone, Perez Ibar says about 90% of the DME companies are fraudulent. He shows us a storefront in this strip mall, used in a scheme to bilk the government out of $48 million in a single year. The mastermind, the man counting the money, Jesus Garces. We head to the home where Garces stashed his stolen money. This is where agents, armed with a search warrant, say they made a startling discovery. Garces had hidden some $2.5 million in cash in 12 PVC pipes under his home.
Was it just loose cash stuffed into the pipes?
They had saran wrapped them or packaged them. They almost looked like bricks of cocaine. And it really was, for us, an indication of how brazen this DME fraud is.
Garces pled guilty to healthcare and wire fraud and was sentenced to 12 and a half years in prison. That hasn't stopped the fraud from flourishing.
We're at the Miami Merchandise Mart, which federal agents tell us is a hotbed for these fake companies set up to bill Medicare for products and services they never deliver.
In this maze of tiny shops in a kind of indoor flea market, we find exactly what investigators describe.
There's a desk. Perhaps there's a bit of a curio with one or two different types of braces. They'll have the manuals that Medicare requires. And usually there's some type of partition if, let's say, we're talking about orthotics, because the patient is supposed to come in and actually get fitted. That's the DME company. Most times we show up, there's nobody there. Or if there is someone there, they have no clue what business they are representing or how it even operates.
In this business, which has been billing Medicare for durable medical equipment, we find a young woman sitting alone at a desk.
Hi, how are you? I'm Contessa Brewer. I'm with CNBC. What is this business?
The woman says it's a medical supply store, but she has nothing to do with the actual business. And the only thing she can show us right now is a brace. She gives us a business card for the owner. I call the number, but it rings at the desk inside.
Hi, this is Contessa Brewer from CNBC. We just talked a minute ago. This is the number you gave me to call to talk to Antonio. Zero,
uno. I leave a message for the owner, who we eventually reach weeks later. He says all the durable medical equipment is ordered through another company after the patient sees a doctor. He refuses to give more information. But government records show the company has billed more than $2 million to Medicare, mostly for wound care.
How big is this problem?
South Florida without question, is the ground zero for healthcare fraud. But it's only one state. There are 49 others in territories where these types of schemes are occurring.
Following an investigation by the Office of Inspector General, the businesses we visited had been cut off from getting Medicare funds. And in just the last few weeks, federal prosecutors say they have uncovered astonishing abuse of our healthcare system. Their exact words. They have charged dozens in Medicare fraud schemes totaling more than $61 million. And next month, a South Florida man will be sentenced for buying and selling more than 2.5 million Medicare beneficiary numbers that facilitates this kind of fraud. His maximum sentence? 5 years.
5 years? For selling millions of people's information?
That's right.
Ripping off the government for and taxpayers, because the government has no money, it's our money, tens, hundreds of millions of dollars?
The reward clearly outweighs the risk, even if you get caught.
I'm old enough to remember when that girl gave you her business card, then you called it and rang on her desk. That was fantastic. I mean, that was like...
Landline.
Hello, hi, it's me, Contessa, again. We just talked like 30 seconds ago. Why is it durable? What do they call them, durable goods?
Durable medical equipment.
Why is it always like the braces and stuff?
It's not just that, though. You're looking at home healthcare. You're looking at selling these pills. They can buy pills off of patients and doctors and pharmacies at a discount. They go and resell it to the pharmacy. So the same bottle of pills gets billed to Medicare over and over and over again without being actually
consumed. And somebody
consumed.
Is touching and whatever, who knows what, with those bottle of pills that the ultimate consumer doesn't even know. Amazing piece, Contessa Brewer. Really important stuff. Maybe that's a place that more spending could go as an investment.
There
Contessa,
you go.
Thank you. All right, good story. All right, now let's lighten it up a bit, shall we? It's 7:50 here and head to Quicker Than the Ticker, all the news that mattered in the world of business and a few stories that don't matter at all.
So let's put 90 seconds on the clock and go. $178 million. That's how much car collectors have spent at the Amelia Island Classic Car Auction in Florida. The top seller, a stunning 1962 Ferrari Spider for a cool $18 million. You may soon be paying more to fly. American Airlines could raise pilot pay up to 40%. That would follow a similar bump for Delta. A driver in Oklahoma City refused to pull over and then led the cops on a car chase. But then he drove straight to the town jail and surrendered.
Well, I've never seen that before.
A crook with honor? You don't see that every day. The Girl Scouts facing a cookie shortage so bad that some are being sold on eBay at crazy markups. They're blaming production issues with a partner baking company. Call that a thinning mint inventory? Free Bach. Apple is adding a new classical music app that is free for Apple Music subscribers. Hey, if you're a fan of cruises, you may love this. Life at Sea Cruises is offering reservations for a 3-year world cruise at $30,000. Now, that's a lot of money, but according to CBC Make It, it's still cheaper than renting an apartment in New York City for just 1 year. TikTok pledging $1.3 billion a year to safeguard European user data. Let's see how much they actually spend. Do you need plans for Valentine's Day 2046? Well, you might, because an asteroid the size of an Olympic swimming pool has a small chance of colliding with Earth. It is the end of the world as we know it, and you'll feel fine. Donald Trump, perfect place to end. There's the bell.
All right, so you're mostly caught up. Coming up, our nightcap on today's Bank Meltdown. All right, we know it was a rough day for your money. Stocks got crushed. So hopefully many of you, maybe on the East Coast or Chicago, are able to enjoy an adult beverage with some friends right now. Maybe help. Here's how things are shaping up for tomorrow morning. Futures, we can take a look at them and see where the markets are headed. In fact, we are seeing them down a little bit, about 2/3 of 1%. All right, not too bad, at least for now. It is time for a nightcap. Here's what ARK Invest Kathy Wood told you earlier in the show about today's meltdown for banks and the risk of a potential banking crisis.
The risks are not on the side of inflation. If anything, when I hear and see banking crises, and this is bank by bank, I don't think it's a banking system crisis, but when I see bank crises like this, I think more about deflation than inflation, right? That certainly was the way to think about 08, 09.
All right, so our take, it's early. Tomorrow, things could calm down or they could heat back up. You should know by now that when it comes to banks and bank runs, there's usually something else nasty hiding under the hood. We shall see. Tune in tomorrow, CNBC, starting at 5 a.m. with Worldwide Exchange. All right, you don't got to go home, but you can't stay here with us because we're out. That is your last call for tonight, and we hope to see you tomorrow. Take care.